I'm Doug Nadvornik. Today on the Inland Journal podcast, we move to the first of two candidates in the race for Spokane City Council in the South District. The incumbent is Lori Kinnear. She's running for a second term. We'll hear from her tomorrow. Today, we talk with Tony Keepy. He's a healthcare consultant who's running for office for the first time.
Homelessness has been kind of the big issue right now. And as you and I talk, the city is trying to figure out what are they going to do in terms of shelters for the winter months. How would you proceed if you were sitting on the city council?
That's a very good question. We have to be compassionate. We want to work with our homeless. And every homeless person is different. You have the drug addicted. Not every homeless person is addicted to drugs. You have the mental health. They need different types of services than the drug addicted. And you have the true homeless that are maybe lost their job, can't work, can't find work, lost their home. So we need to help them. They need to be a priority. Then you have those that it's a way of life. So I look at this, if it's a way of life, that's the way you want to live. We can't give you taxpayer money services. We've got to cut that person off. But the drug addicted, we want to make sure they're being helped, get them through programs and have accountability. With the shelters, I think if you're coming to the shelter, I don't want to see you. You got to make the commitment. You're going to get off drugs. Let's get off drugs. Let's get mental health issues taken care of. And I've got a friend with Life Recovery Solutions. He has a great app where all the shelters in town can be on the app. And a homeless person, 60% have cell phones. That person can look on the app. Where is there a vacancy tonight so I can go to that place? You can even text, I need a pickup, and come get a pickup and take them to that shelter. Those are things I like to see. I don't want to spending, was it $1.8 million for the grocery outlet that needs a lot of repair? Total budget was $5 million for the entire facility just for a temporary shelter. I like the idea of having services there, but is that the right move to spend that kind of money on only 100, 135 homeless people?
Is there a place for temporary overnight sheltering in your mind?
Well, I look at the Union Gospel Mission or that charities, Catholic charities. They have overnight shelters that they can take place. And Family Promise, they take care of families. A lot of families that are homeless. And what did I read? They had about 30 people. They were 80. They could hold 80 people a night. Now they're down to 30. And now there's been government money, funds coming into them so they can have another 30 people up to 60 housing. So that services I like seeing. I want to make sure we help the family that can be taken care of, that just in a tough situation, they want good help. The grocery outlet, I don't think having just coming in, moving you out of the core of Spokane where the services aren't there, but having services there can be beneficial. So I'm not a real proponent. If you build more places, more homeless will come. Are we enabling them? We're keeping you into that lifestyle, or are we trying to get you out of that lifestyle?
But what about somebody who's not ready to make that decision and they just need some place to stay at night because it's cold?
That's a good question. If they know there's no place to stay, there's no room for them, are they going to stay here in Spokane? Of course, you want to be compassionate and help that person out, and we can't help everybody out. And we're doing it on taxpayer money. How much money can we throw at it? Look at Seattle. Was it $100,000 per person they're spending on homeless? It's a lot of money and very little results getting out. And I don't want to be another Seattle. So we're going to help you if you want help. We're going to help you get off drugs. We're going to help you with mental health issues, but they all got to be held accountable. If you have, look at Union Gospel Mission. And I've met homeless people telling me they start using drugs again, they get kicked out of the program. They had to wait 30 days. And they said, I'm going to do it this time. I will do it this time because this means a lot to me. I want to get out of my predicament. I've talked to other homeless people that they got a hand up. They learn how to do resumes. They learn how to do computer skills, got basic skills that they didn't learn growing up. But that got them back into the workforce. They said, I got children now. I'm renting a home. This is great. I said, well, how long ago were you homeless? He said, well, I got out of the homeless situation about 2 years ago. And you feel so good about that. And I met a young 23, 24-year-old. Said he was homeless. He didn't want to live by his parents' rules. Went homeless. It was his choice. But then he realized, I've got to grow up. I got to be accountable, and start. He said he worked three jobs. Got out of his predicament. Took three jobs, realizing, hey, I can do this. I don't need drugs. I've got a wife now. I got a small child. This is what I want for my career. I want to work every day and be more productive citizens here in Spokane.
So what about those folks who are in the middle of a drug addiction or something like that, you say jail, treatment, and they say neither one. What role does the city have in trying to direct them to one of those two?
Well, we have community court. If they committed a crime, and this is where we have to go after the drug dealers. We've got to cut the core off. We got to cut the supply of drugs coming into Spokane. And we're a corridor right through 90 where drugs are coming into Spokane. So if they're committing a crime, we have community court. That community court is being very tough. These are your options. We'll give you jail time, or you can go through treatment. So if you miss treatment, you're going to jail. And they have a choice. So hopefully they choose treatment. And yes, it's going to be forced on them, but that's the court system telling them this is what you have to do.
Okay, but at a time when Spokane County's jail that we can see through our window here, at the time that it is overcrowded and there's complaints about there's no room for the folks who are doing, you know, multiple offenders, serious offenders, they're being turned out onto the streets because you've got people who are doing drugs who are occupying those beds. So how do you solve that conundrum?
Well, I've listened to Sheriff. I've heard the Sheriff Ozzie speak several times on the need of a new jail. He says we need a jail for 2,500 inmates. So right now our jail holds, what, 400 inmates, and we have like 700 in it? There's no room. So we don't crack down on the misdemeanors. Our police are tied. Why arrest somebody, go to the system, 30 minutes later they're let go, and they're just out committing another crime? So we've got to address the whole situation. I believe we need a larger county jail, a jail that has services, you know, help the mental health, help the drug addicted in the jail system. So, because we want them productive. If we're not helping them be productive, be back as a productive citizen, we're not doing our job as a city.
So as the mayor talks about, here's what our plans are going to be for the shelter, he also talks about the other cities around Spokane who are not doing their share of, you know, opening shelters and that thing. Do you share that viewpoint with him, that other cities could be doing more around us?
Well, I've talked to the city council members at the Spokane Valley, and they get funds from the federal government and turn around and give those funds right to the county. It's just passed right through. So I don't understand why those funds aren't getting to the homeless here in Spokane if they're already providing funds. Catholic Charities has got 200 low-barrier homes in Spokane Valley for the homeless or people that are needing a hand up. So, yes, I think they're doing what they need to be doing. I don't know how we can ask them to do much more. Is it just about the money?
Do they keep their money and open their own shelter there?
I don't think they want to do that. All the services are here in downtown Spokane. You got behavior health, you got the mental service, all the mental services downtown Spokane. So we have to add new services in Spokane Valley. That's a decision they have to make. And it's something Spokane's got to solve on our own.
So let's talk about permanent housing. And let's talk about, there are some people who say that the county needs to open its urban boundaries a little bit to allow more space for housing to be built here. Do you agree with that?
Oh, I absolutely agree with that. Right now, we're in a housing crisis. I mean, the Spokane realtors told us back in 2012, we're going to be here. Rent's going to go up and housing prices will go up. Did our current city council listen? We want to infill where we can infill, but building 200 new apartments on Regal Street across from Target is not the answer. Regal is so crowded right now, you can't hardly drive up and down Regal on the South Hill. And you put 200 more cars that are living there on Regal, what's that going to do to the Upper South Hill? It's going to hurt us. We need to be able to build out. And I've been at city council members where we had developers there asking for land, water going to their land. That water stops right at the boundary. And they're even going to pay the money to get that water hookup so they can build 300-400 homes. And they turned them down, no. Over in Hilliard, they finally approved Pete's land. That's going to really prosper. Another 400 homes up there in Hilliard. Nice homes. It's going to really help that community, seeing that many homes, nice homes, and more people living out in the Hilliard area. North-South Freeway is going to open up, more people moving to the northeast of Spokane. But we need to have less regulation, and we need to sit down with the developers. Why are your hands tied? What do you need to untie your hands? How can you build? We need another 6,000 to 8,000 homes. Look at Amazon coming in, another 1,000 jobs. where are those people going to live if we don't open up more housing? We're just going to cause our houses to go higher and higher and higher. Right now, the homeless situation, the current council says it's a housing situation. That may be a small part of it, but they can't control rent. Their policies on supply and demand. Look at the supply and demand right now. When the supply goes up, prices come down. When the supply goes down, prices go up. That's happened to us right now. We don't have a good supply of housing on the market.
Our guest on today's Inland Journal podcast is healthcare consultant Tony Keepy, who's running for the Spokane City Council.
Are you convinced, though, that enough developers are going to build enough housing at that low part of the schedule so that, you know, people who are on Social Security and that sort of thing are going to have places to move in? Or is the government going to have to get involved in, whether it be through a housing trust fund, as Ben Stuckert has talked about, or some other ways to encourage those developers to build at that lower end?
Well, I'd like to see is to give tax incentives for developers. If you build small barrier homes in downtown Spokane, we're going to give you a tax incentive. Because if a developer can make $150,000 on a home or $25,000 on a home, takes the same amount of time to build the homes, what's a developer going to do? We can't tie our developer hands. And I've got another friend known for Boy Scouts. He has a plan to put 300 homes, low-income type homes, but he's asking for the government to give the land. That's the only way he can really do it. And they passed rules, laws that we can give if you're doing low-barrier housing, we will give you the land. But over the past year, he's been trying to get the land. He's got the developers to develop it, the donations all in set. It's going to be 300 homes. It'll be homes and apartments with a community center in the middle and a community kitchen also, where the neighbors can come in and get to know each other. Great setup, but yet we've got his hands tied to build a simple 300 homes.
So some incentives have been given. The city council this year voted on some incentives to try to encourage more townhouses. What other incentives would you talk about? You talked about taxes. What other things?
We need to build duplexes, townhomes. Somebody can move into a starter home. That starter home, they want to be able to move up. Right now, 42% of our houses are rental houses. So why aren't is our rent so high that we can't afford, our money's going into our rent so we can't save money because we're living paycheck to paycheck. So we need to be able to help people to buy the next level house. So we need to make sure that we have lower houses with upscale housing, from apartments to a small house to a condo to a duplex, where they can build up and be part of the American dream.
What about rents? I mean, rents continue to go up as well. Is there some sort of, rent control that the city can do or anything like that?
We need to stay out of that. We need to open up our supply and demand. And right now, we don't have a lot of supply for rental homes. The average property owner has about four homes, four places to live in. And they're wanting, with our policies right now, let's get out of the market. Let's sell the home. But by doing that, the rent's going to go even higher because there's going to be fewer homes, places to live, to rent. And I've met with some people and I feel so sorry for them. Social Security income, making $1,000 a month. And you look at their apartment and they're paying $500 a month in rent. And it needs painting, needs new carpet, needs to be fixed up. I don't see how a landlord can charge $500. And my heart just bleeds for them. I said, holy cow, half of your Social Security income is going just for one person, a widow, living. I've been in several homes like that with widows, and they've invited me in and showed me how they're living. And so I've lived here for 20 years. My rent's been $300 a month, $350 a month. In the past year, I've had two large increases. Well, maybe the landlord should have been raising prices all along, but let's fix the place up a little bit. If you're going to charge that much. But it's very tough for senior citizens. And with Medicare, there's plans out there to help them get health care benefits, dual subsidy income.
Well, let's follow that. What about the landlord who doesn't want to fix up? He's raising the rent, but he's not fixing up the place, because we hear a lot of those sorts of stories. Is the city responsible in some role for helping those people at the low end of the scale there?
Well, we have a landlord association. I think people need to report that to the Landlord Association. We need help here, and let them, within their own group, hey, we've had some complaints on your buildings inside. Let's fix them up. Let's not be a slumlord. It's not the government's responsibility. Let's keep the government out.
Can landlords police themselves? Is that the best way?
Well, every group has a bad person or two. And if you have 95% of the landlords are being very good, they need to police themselves for that 5%, because that 5% is what is making the noise on issues that maybe are being blown out of proportion. And I've been to city council meetings where you've had people very passionate speaking about the rent going up or evicting people in their building, but you don't hear the whole story. You find out, well, all that building's being torn down so they can build something else. So that's why everybody's being evicted. The landlord can't make money as it is, the building owner, so he wants something new to make more money.
Yeah. So let's go to streets. What are the big what are the biggest streets related issues in your neighborhood? In the Northeast, they're talking about paving the streets because they have a lot of streets that aren't paved. What's the big issue in the South?
It's funny, I was on Cuba when I was doorbelling, and they have a sign up there that says no dust zone, because they've lived there, so we've been here 50 years, and they won't pave our street. Why should they have to pave their street when the city should be offering basic infrastructure? They're paying taxes there. They live there. They've been there for a long time. Let's pave the streets. We have over 60 miles of streets in all of Spokane that need to be paved. So why aren't we listening, and why isn't the government listening, the city council listening, and paving our streets? I want to see that in the 25-year comprehensive plan. Next time it's updated, let's spend $3 to $5 million per year making sure that every citizen, their street is paved. And I've talked to some neighbors on like 12th Street between Freya and Ray. Well, they don't want their street paved because people cut across. They'll use it as a cut across to go from Ray to Freya. So I can understand that point, but yes, they would like to have it paved, but that's the downside of it.
So should the city streets department put as a higher priority paving streets that aren't paved and maybe set aside some of the other things in their 6 or 12 year plans?
We've got to do both. I mean, we've had streets that haven't been paved for 50 years since we've been Spokane. We need the time to start investing. If we can do a mile a year, 2 miles a year, next thing you know, you've got it all paved. But let's put in the plan over the next 5 years, what streets are high priority streets. Now, they're going to pave 44th. It's a small, and I taught my kids how to drive when they're 16. I had the best time, said, okay, make a right, go left on Crestline, make a right on this street, then make a left there on Regal. And there's so many potholes on that section, you can't drive down it. But well, the soccer complex is. Well, you got to pave that because you're going to put 200 apartments there. So that's being done. But all of Spokane, we spend a lot of money on our parks, beautiful Riverside Park. But why aren't we spending more money on fixing our streets, doing them right? I think they're finally listening. We've had so many potholes over the years that every year I get a new set of tires. I just bought a set of tires getting ready for this winter last week. But we have so many potholes, we're not using a high enough quality. And I think they're testing Bernard out with the glass fault. And I think that's a step in the right direction, because I hear Hilliard did it on Market. They put a layer of broken glass down so water won't go through the pavement, and they're not having potholes there. So if that works, it's more expensive to do. We need to invest in our citizens and invest in our city. Let's pave the streets.
So you're okay with spending a little bit of extra money for the quality in that case?
Absolutely, because right now our average street lasts about 10 years. What if we can get that street to last 20 years by using higher quality product and use this glass fault? And you see what cities like in the Midwest are doing, same type situation where they're not having the problems we're having.
You're listening to the Inland Journal podcast. Our guest is Tony Keepy, who's running for the Spokane City Council in the South District.
So let's go to police. And I'm particularly interested, are you satisfied with the accountability system for the police system? Is the ombudsman program working? What are your thoughts about that?
Well, with the ombudsman, there used to be, 100 complaints a year. Now there's like 25 to 35 complaints. So it must be working, because you're not getting the complaints go through the system. So yes, I would say that system's working, but we need more police on our streets. Walking downtown, and you want to be able to shake their hand and feel comfortable that a policeman's coming down the street. You want to feel safe that he's there to protect us. You don't feel, as a policeman, I got to walk away. But the policeman, the criminal, police are coming down our street every hour, every 2 hours. We can't do drugs on this street. We got to walk away. So, yeah, I think we've gone a long way with the ombudsman.
Are you satisfied with police wearing body cams? Is that a good thing in Spokane?
I think it is, because it protects the police, but it's got to be public information where you can actually see it. If the police did something wrong and their camera's not on, it makes the police look bad. But if they didn't do anything wrong and they're wearing it, it makes them innocent. So I think it's a win-win situation for the police wearing their thing.
Your body cam, yeah.
Body cam.
So let's go back to the question of more police. If you looked at the budget and you said, you know, we need another 30 or 40 officers this year, you know, voters in 2019 said, we'll increase our property taxes for an extra 20 cops and 30 firefighters. Would you support spending that extra money in order to increase the police presence?
Oh, absolutely.
And where would you take the money from then?
That's what I was afraid you're going to say. Where are you going to take the money from? Because we have a $1 billion budget. And I look at everything needs to go towards public safety first. That's the first thing. Once we have all the public safety needs, because right now citizens, when I'm talking up on the South Hill, they don't feel safe going downtown Spokane. So we used to walk downtown Spokane. We used to ride our bike down there, but they don't feel safe anymore. We've got to change that. And I think that's putting a precinct in downtown quarter in the Spokane area and having police walking around. And you see when somebody gets in trouble, there's a fight there on Sprague Street a couple months ago, and there's 17 police there in minutes, but yet you have property crime happening in the East Central area, and a policeman doesn't show up for 2 to 3 hours. And we've got to change that. So does it mean more police? I think it does. But where we find the money, we've got to look at each line item by line item on the budget. And the 2020 budget's done for this year, but I think next year, everybody needs to be held accountable. Okay, you spent $5 million of your budget. Was it productive? Are you accountable? Did you get results for that money? If yes, you keep that program. If they say no, you decrease it or stop funding it.
Are you a believer that there's a lot of fat, quote-unquote fat, in city government?
With $1 billion, you think, how can we not have enough money to go around when there's $1 billion in the coffer? So I think there's some fat that we can trim. And it's looking, you got to hold each director accountable for their own budgets. Okay, you got to justify spending this. I looked at the budget many times. It's 1,100 pages. And they're going line item by line item. These are expenses. Well, where can I cut? Well, you can't cut anything until you're able to justify how they're spending their money. And is it getting results or not getting results?
So let's finish with this. Last Friday there was a big climate strike down at City Hall, and the UN is talking about climate, that sort of thing. Do you support the city, the ordinance that aims to have the city's electric supply be fully filled by renewable energy sources by 2030? Is that something that you support?
The government does not need to be involved with that. I don't believe in climate change. I believe in, we have pollution. First time I flew into Spokane, oh, look how beautiful the sky is. I have never seen a bright blue sky like this. Being from the south, it's always hazy, lots of pollution, and the rivers are so clean and clear. But Spokane's a beautiful town. We don't have the pollution that we see in other cities. And I've got solar panels on my house. That's one thing my wife and I invested last year. And the solar panels, my utility bills are $20 a month. $30, and that's basically gas, and you charge $9 just to have electric hookup. And then we just got $1,000 back for our first 12 months last week for our utilities over the last year, because what you don't use, they buy back. And it's equivalent to planting 300 trees in the city. And we can't plant that many trees, but everybody had a few solar panels because they choose to do that. That's great. And I love them. I actually love them on my house every month.
So why did you make the investment then? Did you see it as an economic investment, or did you do it as a quote-unquote environmental statement?
I saw it as an economic investment. This is our home for the next 30 years, if I live that long. And the note is $175 a month. I've got an $8,000 rebate credit, great credits from the federal government, $5,000 I got back that last year. I get $3,000 back next year. We're expected to get about $1,800 a year back for the next 5 years on the Avista rebate program that paid for the panels. And I think people need to understand or know how the system works and take advantage of all the rebates. The rebates, my utility bill is nothing. I like that. but I didn't do it for the environmental, but I know it helps the environment. And you start looking at the reports, golly, look how many trees I planted this one year. What a great investment. I wish everybody invested in that. And I like to see new homes when they go up, give people choices. Buy a home with solar panels, buy a home without solar panels, but that's the developer's decision.
So is it a bad thing that the city has tried to move toward renewable sources in the next 10 or 12 years? Is that a bad thing?
I don't mean to make this
a loaded question for you. I'm just curious about your thinking about this.
I believe the government shouldn't be responsible. We need to do marketing, educate. By doing this, this is what helps. But not everybody can ride their bicycle. Not everybody can afford a new Prius car. You look at the car lots, $3,000 cars, $4,000 cars. That's what they can afford to drive in. Not everybody can take the bus. And we're trying to make our city where they want you to walk every place. I don't want to be New York City. I don't want to have high rises downtown Spokane. We moved to Spokane because we thought it was a hidden secret. What a gem. What a beautiful place to live and raise our four kids. Going downtown, I felt safe 20 years ago. Right now, I don't want to walk downtown. I want to make sure people are coming in. But as far as the government needs to just really stay out of this. Market, this is why we want you to go green. And I think using my testimony of what the solar panels, how many trees is planting, is a good example for people. I didn't know it was like that. Our utility bill used to be $300 a month. And now it's like last month, $60, $40 a month before that. And we're keeping our temperature 71 degrees instead of 75 now. So 4 degrees cooler, we're more comfortable in our house than we were last year. But I think it's been a great blessing to have.
Okay, Tony, those were the issues that I was asking about. Were there other issues that are important to you that you wanted to talk about while we're here?
Well, let's talk about bringing in economics, high-paying jobs. Right now, the average income of four for a family is around $45,000, $48,000 a year. We need to have better-paying jobs. We need to recruit companies, high-tech companies. Seattle, it's got so expensive over there. Let's bring some of those companies over here. Let's bring the Aerotech. But we have to plan for growth. If we're going to have more people moving here, we have to have housing for them. Or we're not going to get out of the average income being $48,000 a year. I'd love to see the average income at $60,000, $70,000 a year. Then it tells me we're doing our job.
So what's the city's role then in recruiting companies to come here?
We need to be business friendly. We need to make sure it's easy to do business here. We have to work with our county commissioners. Our commissioners go out and recruit. Look what Al French has done for the West Plains. He's brought in a lot of great businesses to that area. This is what we need to do, working closely with them to make sure we're a business friendly city that recruits businesses want to work here. We have Walmart, went to Post Falls. Buck Nice went to Post Falls. Well, they want to go to Liberty Lake. And you find out, well, our B&O tax is so high for them. It was cheaper to be right across the state line because they could do business and make more money.
Isn't that a City of Liberty Lake issue, though, not a City of Spokane issue?
It's a state issue, and Liberty Lake taxes.
Tony Keepy is a candidate for the Spokane City Council in the South District. He finished second in the August primary to Lori Kinnear. Kinnear won 59% of the vote to Keepy's 23%. Our next Inland Journal podcast will feature our conversation with Kinnear. You can find our candidate interviews at SpokanePublicRadio.org. Go to the Regional News tab and then click on Election 2019. Inland Journal is Spokane Public Radio's public affairs podcast and radio program. You can subscribe at Apple Podcasts, at NPR One or Google Play, or hear it at the Spokane Public Radio website. Send your comments and story ideas to inlandjournal@kpbx.org. Thanks for joining us. I'm Doug Nadvornik.